brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. This April, our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are offering a huge $3,000 discount with a trade-in of any model in any condition. And they'll knock off $3,000 when you trade in one of their competitors' machines, too. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT Plus models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is former NBA player CJ Watson, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. Mike Clinton here without my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. We were planning to record together tonight, but we had a delay. We got delayed, and so we decided to scrap our dual podcast, and I ended up just wanting to come on and share a couple of thoughts about each one of the playoff series. And then Jason and I will be on tomorrow night, which for most of you when you're listening to this will be tonight, and then that episode will release on Thursday. I'm assuming you're going to be listening to this on Wednesday afternoon. So, that being said, our games from tonight: Cavs Knicks, Celtics Hawks, and Suns Clippers. So we're going to start with those three games. We will start with the Cavs and Knicks. So just to share a couple of thoughts from that game and this series. Obviously, the Knicks win game one and had the lead most of the game. Cavs took a very brief lead towards the end of the game, and the Knicks were able to finish it off. Brunson was fantastic in the fourth quarter of that game. So, thoughts after game two. Number one, as a Cavs fan, I find myself being deathly afraid of Jalen Brunson. Every time he gets to the basket or puts up a shot, I just feel like he's going to make the right decision. I feel like the shot's going in. And I am not excited to play the next however many games it takes to conclude this series. I'm not excited to face Jalen Brunson. I did not expect to feel that way going into the series, but I'm definitely afraid of Jalen Brunson. On the other hand, I'm not that afraid of Julius Randle. I'm happy to see him banging into Mobley and trying to get to the rim or taking threes. Totally fine with that. RJ Barrett, man, I'm not sure what this guy is, and he has not been good in either one of these two games. I don't know what you do with Barrett if you're the New York Knicks. It just feels like he doesn't really shoot the ball well enough. He's not athletic enough to attack the basket. It seems like he's just average at everything that he does, which in this series is good for the Cavs, but for the long-term future of the Knicks, they need him to be more than that. He's got to be better than where he is right now, or at least what he's shown in the playoffs. On the Cavs side, I said going into this series that Darius Garland was going to be the key. Tonight he puts up 32, 26 in the first half, and just really took control. And Mitchell let him take the wheel and manage the Cavs' offense, and he was fantastic. Not only on offense, but defensively, I just thought he did a tremendous job of moving his feet. There were a bunch of times where he was fighting over screens and looking which direction he was going and still getting in front of guys. That was probably the best defensive performance I've ever seen from Garland. And that says nothing about the 26 points, like I said, that he put up in the first half. He was unbelievable. So if Garland can play well, Mitchell, I think, no question, proven playoff performer. He's going to come up big when this series shifts in New York. I have no question about that. I think Garland showed tonight that he's ready for the moment. And the Cavaliers' defense tonight was just completely stifling. They could not, the Knicks could not get anything going at all. And every time they got to the basket, they were met with bodies. Cavs moved their feet out on the perimeter. Allen and Mobley were protecting the rim just like they always do. And it just made it really, really hard for the Knicks to score. There was a ton of Knicks turnovers tonight. And normally the Knicks are a team that just does not turn the ball over. But tonight, the Cavs ended up making the Knicks turn the ball over multiple times in situations where I don't think they normally would. The one area the Cavs have to shore up is the rebounding. Although they rebounded much better tonight, they still felt like they're getting out-muscled on the boards at times. And I think they're going to have to fix that in New York and make sure, just like they did tonight, they did a much better job. But I still think that the offensive rebounding for the Knicks is going to be an issue, or at least something the Cavs are going to have to pay particular attention to as the series moves forward. And then the last thing I'll say is Evan Mobley tonight had a much better second half, but as far as his development, he looked really tentative in the first half. He looked almost lost out there, and just needs to get stronger, and or he's got to develop his shot. I think he's got to be able to make outside shots, because him trying to bump and bang his way in playoff basketball to the rim just isn't going to work in terms of him being an isolation type scorer. Now, if he's always going to be your third or fourth option, then I guess that doesn't matter. But man, if we want Evan Mobley to get where we want him to go, he's got to develop some strength. He's got to develop the ability to shoot the ball. And if he gets those two things, as I've said numerous times in the pod, his passing is incredible. And tonight, like I said, he bounced back in the second half to really play much, much better. Had some nice catches in traffic, finished with some dunks, and just continued to do Evan Mobley things on the defensive end of the floor. His one flaw, as has been widely talked about in many circles, is he just got to get strong. Guys like Randall can still kind of put their shoulder into him and drive him back. But other than that, that's just about his only weakness. Otherwise, he loses feet against just about anybody. He can block shots from anywhere. He's never out of position. And so I think moving forward in this series, it's going to be interesting to see if the Cavs can maintain what they did defensively tonight, and then can they continue to get contributions from one guy off the bench. Tonight it was LeVert, who was outstanding. He was equally as good tonight as he was bad in game one. And so the Cavs are going to need somebody off their bench to provide that performance, whether that ends up being Chetty, whether it ends up being LeVert, whether somewhere, some way they give Lamar Stevens a chance, whether Okoro is able to bounce back and knock down some threes and play in the second half after picking up his second foul early in this game, missing some shots. J.D. Bickerstaff never brought him back. So I think as we go forward, what I'm going to be looking for in game three is, does the Cavs' level of defensive intensity stay at the level it was in game two? Can Garland continue to play at his best? And which Cav off the bench is going to give the team the lift that they need? And then on the Knicks side, do they play better when they go home? We'll have to see what happens with Barrett and some of their role players. Quickly kind of got it going a little bit in the fourth quarter, but he was basically a non-factor in both of the games. He wasn't a big factor in game one, and he certainly was not a factor at all in what happened in game two. So although I think the Knicks bench is deeper, I'm not sure that they've performed especially well. They played decently, I'd say, in game one, but tonight they were pretty much a no-show. So going forward, Cavs D, Garland, and then some X factor off the bench for the Cavs. We shall see. I still think the Cavs get this series maybe it has to go seven now, whereas I didn't think that coming in, but we will see. So that wraps up Cavs-Knicks. Next series, Celtics-Hawks. Boston wins tonight. Goes up 2-0 in the series. First thought, this series is over. I don't see how Atlanta can come back and beat the Celtics. There just doesn't seem like a pathway. And my second thought is, if you're Atlanta, and Trae Young, I would say, was subpar again tonight, so two games in a row. Last year in the playoffs against Miami, he was not good either. I think the consensus is that it's going to be really difficult to build a championship team around Trae Young and his lack of defense and just the way that he plays the game. So I think the big question coming out of this series is going to be, what does Atlanta do this summer? Do they try to figure out a way to retool around Trae Young, or do they decide, hey, we're going to explore the trade market for Trae Young, see what we can get for him, and recalibrate their team around DeJounte Murray? I don't know. It remains to be seen, but I would not want to be in the Trae Young business, at least not as my number one franchise player. I think Boston probably sweeps the series. Maybe Atlanta gets one game, but I think moving forward, it's going to be an easy victory here for the Boston Celtics. Next series, game tonight, Suns-Clippers. Clippers went out to a lead in the first half, and it looked like Phoenix was maybe going to be in trouble, but they were able to bounce back. Booker had a huge second half, sort of carried the team, and they were able to even the series at 1-1. So I think a couple takeaways from this series. One, Kawhi Leonard has just been phenomenal. 38 in game one, 31 in game two. Pretty much can get to his spot whenever he wants. He's so strong, deceptively fast. You watch him and you're like, man, that guy's huge. And doesn't look like he's moving that fast. And then all of a sudden, boom, he's right where he wants to be. And just can elevate and shoot that little mid-range jumper over the top of anybody. So I think discounting how good Kawhi Leonard is something that we all did, myself included, just because of the load management, the fact that we haven't seen this guy very often. Kawhi was tremendous in both of those games. Westbrook had the 3-for-19 in game one, comes back tonight, shoots the ball better. Definitely was impactful throughout the game. I think what you see when you watch these games is that although Russ's athleticism has declined a little bit, when he wants to explode to the basket or get up off his feet or move and defend, he's certainly still able to do that at a really high level. Now, my other thought here is more of a personal one. Like, I've just become, I don't know, kind of anti-Kevin Durant after the Warriors playing against the Cavs, him going to Brooklyn and attaching himself to Kyrie and asking out a trade and going to Phoenix. I've kind of had my fill of Kevin Durant, and I'm definitely, surprisingly, rooting for the Clippers. Not that I ever was anti-Clippers, but I think I was more, I don't really have a feeling about the Clippers one way or another, but in both of these games, as I sit down to watch, I've definitely been rooting for the Clippers to win these two games. I think there's some anti-Durant feelings that I have that are still manifesting themselves from the old Cavs-Warriors rivalry. So, I don't know where this series is going to go. Clippers obviously are going home tied up 1-1. I think they got a pretty good shot of beating the Suns. It looks like Paul George is not going to come back. If he does, obviously it would be a huge plus for the Clippers. But I think when all is said and done, I think the Clippers are going to be right there. The series could go either way. But I expect the Clippers to maybe pull this one out, surprisingly, just because I think Kawhi has been so good. Must win for Phoenix tonight, and they got it done. We'll see. They got to go on the road for two with the Clippers. All right, let's go to some other series. Let's start in the East. We're talking Nets, Sixers. I think the big takeaway here is that this series is basically over, kind of like the Hawks and Celtics. The first two games haven't been very competitive, and I would expect Philly to finish this series off in four, maybe five. And all Philly wants to do is come out of it with a healthy James Harden. Now, James Harden was terrible in game two, a typical Harden playoff performance, but Maxey came through 33, and Embiid was his usual brilliant self. So Philly was still able to win that game. But if you're the Sixers, you clearly want Harden to be playing at a high level in the playoffs, which has not been his MO over the course of his career. And you also want him to remain healthy and not get any kind of muscle pull or anything that could potentially sideline him for the more important series, the bigger series coming up once the Sixers dispatch with the Nets. Then on the Nets side of it, they just have to shoot more threes. They've got to spread the floor. They've got to try to make Harden move and defend and not be allowed to hide on some of their interior players. They have to just take the variance game and hope that there's multiple games where they can hit 20 threes. And if they do that, then they'll have a chance to win a game or steal a game. Otherwise, I just don't see that happening. And I think Philly finishes it off in 4 or 5. The other Eastern Conference series, Bucks, Heat. We had the Giannis injury, which obviously led to the Miami Heat taking game one. Jimmy Butler was tremendous. That was playoff Jimmy Butler at his finest. Carried Miami past what was left of the Bucks. And it was kind of surprising that Miami won that game as easily as they did, although sometimes when a star player goes out, there's sort of this shell-shocked, okay, what do we do now? We got to figure it out. And I think that's what kind of happened to the Bucks. And then Miami played well and shot the three ball pretty well in that game as well. And so I think as you look forward, there's been a positive prognosis for Giannis that he's probably going to play in game two. And if he does, you got to give the advantage back to Milwaukee. But if Giannis is sidelined for any length of time, Milwaukee probably still has the more talented team. Obviously, they no longer probably have the best player in the series. If Giannis is out, I think that mantle shifts over to Jimmy. But the Bucks have a better roster than Miami from guys 1 through 8. And it looks like I said, Giannis is going to come back. And so I would anticipate if that happens that the Bucks are going to take care of business and they'll win 4 straight or at least 4 out of the next 5. If Giannis is out indefinitely, look, the Bucks could still win it. Maybe you'd argue that they still should win it, but that gives Miami at least a decent chance. Losing Hero clearly hurts the Heat, who's already a team that struggles to score and make baskets. So without Hero, puts an even greater burden on Jimmy Butler. Now, he was up to the task in game one. Can he be up to that task 3 more times? That's the thing. He could have a couple of stinkers in there, and still Miami could win this series if you get the best version of Jimmy Butler 3 times out of the next 6 games. So we'll see. The Bucks don't want to play with fire. You want to get Giannis back in the lineup. Dispatch Miami as fast as you can, and then wait for whoever's going to win what probably is going to be a long series between the Knicks and the Cavs. Other Western series, the Nuggets and the Timberwolves right now, 1-0 Nuggets. First game, non-competitive. I think that Denver, because they have home court advantage throughout the Western Conference playoffs, I still think that they have to be the favorite. I know they struggled a little bit down the stretch. And Jokic kind of tossed away his third potential MVP just with sitting out at the end of the season and maybe just not playing as well. The team obviously falling off a little bit. But there's no way that Minnesota is going to be able to compete in this series. I think that when you watch Minnesota, the only thing that can keep popping into your head is all the things that they traded for Rudy Gobert. It's just incredible when you look at the draft capital that they traded away, plus the players that they traded away, plus the draft pick that became Walker Kessler. Man, as has been said on numerous national podcasts, I don't think that if you go back and redo that trade, I don't think Utah would trade Walker Kessler back for Rudy Gobert at this point. And Jokic is going to continue to just tear up Towns or Rudy Gobert, whoever's guarding him. And I expect the Nuggets to finish this series off, maybe in 4, 5 at the most. Next series, Lakers-Grizzlies. Lakers win game one. AD has a big game, although he has his per usual injury scare. in the first half. You have a big Austin Reeves game. You have a huge Rui Hachimura game. I was a little bit surprised. I mean, I said, I think, in the pod last week that I thought Memphis would win in five because it looked like LeBron just wasn't going to have the stamina that he was going to need, at least in my mind, to be able to win this series, especially against the young and hungry Grizzlies. But I think what game one happened, obviously you had two performances that were somewhat unusual, some might say really unusual, with Hachimura and Reeves. But it allowed LeBron to kind of take a back seat. The Lakers can get big performances from guys other than LeBron and allow him to kind of pick his spots. To me, that's the ideal formula for the Lakers winning not just individual games or this series, but if they really want to advance as far as a lot of people think they can, I think LeBron has to be able to step back and allow other guys to do their thing and then figure out when are the moments when he really needs to step on the gas. Now, whether they can do that, whether or not AD and LeBron can remain healthy for this series and beyond, who knows? But that was an impressive game one performance from the Lakers. On the Grizzlies side, I think it makes you wonder, obviously, the Ja injury is huge and whether or not he's going to be able to play in game two, game three, and beyond. We don't really know what the extent of the injury is other than the fact that they said the x-rays were negative, so he doesn't have anything broken or fractured. I'm guessing it's going to be how much can he handle the pain. If you're trying to shoot the basketball and handle the basketball and do the things that Ja does with the ball in his hands all the time, I think that's going to be really, really difficult for him to be at his best. And the thing I wonder about with Memphis is maybe almost thinking about it in opposite terms of how I was thinking about it going into the series. I really looked at it and said, man, the youth of Memphis is going to be able to wear out the Lakers and just get up and down the floor and make those old guys who are prone and susceptible to injury do more than maybe what they want to. And instead, kind of what happened in game one is the Grizzlies have talked a lot, and I'm just not sure that are they almost too cocky where it's going to end up coming back to bite them? That's the way I felt after watching game one, was that Memphis kind of thought we're going to take care of business, and then when they didn't, they weren't quite sure how to react. And of course, the Morant injury played a part in that for sure. I'm not writing Memphis off. I'm not giving them up for dead. I think game one doesn't always tell the tale. I would expect Memphis to come back the same way the Cavs came back tonight and get a big win in their home game tomorrow night. We shall see, but I think Memphis bounces back, and I still think they win this series. It may not go five games the way I originally predicted, but I think if Ja is able to at least get out on the floor and play, contribute, then I think Memphis still wins this series. But the Lakers have made that outcome in a lot more doubt based on how well they played. Last series, Warriors-Kings, by far the most entertaining just from a pure basketball standpoint. These were two super entertaining games, tons of offense, lots of great shot making. Had the drama in the last game of Sabonis grabbing a hold of Draymond's ankle, reminiscent of Jeff Van Gundy years ago grabbing onto Alonzo Mourning. And then Draymond, of course, responding with a stomp on Sabonis' chest, which we learned earlier tonight was going to result in a one-game suspension for Draymond, which is not really what the Warriors were hoping for, heading back home down 2-0 and having to play without Draymond. Not a good situation for the Warriors. I think what I take out of this series is two things. One, De'Aaron Fox has just been tremendous. Game one, he was unbelievable, scoring the basketball, shooting it, getting to the rim. Game two, he didn't shoot it quite as well, but he still controlled every aspect of that game. And when Sacramento needed a big shot, he was there. Monk off the bench has been tremendous. Really, when you look at it, I think the difference between what the Kings are getting from Malik Monk versus what the Warriors are not getting from Jordan Poole, to me, that's been a huge piece of what has swung this series in the Kings' favor. We all know that Golden State has not been very good on the road this whole season. And so, in a lot of ways, it's not that surprising that they're down 0-2. And you're going to have to guess that when they get back to Chase Center that they're going to play better. But I think a lot of people thought that Sacramento was going to fold in the face of the championship medal of the Golden State Warriors. And that just wasn't the case. And I think, to me, it comes down to that old Kentucky backcourt, Malik Monk, De'Aaron Fox. Both of those guys were incredible. And Fox, for people who haven't watched him all season, you know, he's been a guy that I've always liked and felt like he just needed to either get to a better situation or have the situation around him improve. And that's what's happened this year. He's been tremendous in this series so far. And it'll be interesting to see if the Kings can take their offense and travel. They've actually been better statistically as a team on the road, better defense. Their offense is about the same on the road as it is at home. So I think Sacramento is going to be ready. Golden State, I expect a big performance out of Steph, but having no Draymond, I think it's going to be tough for the Warriors. I think Sacramento goes on, and I think they win this series, despite the fact that Steph has been unbelievable. Everybody expected that shot at the end of game one to go in. I know I was stunned when he missed it. The number of shots that he makes that other guys in the league wouldn't even attempt is crazy. His shot making is unbelievable. Obviously, no one will argue when we say that he's the best shooter in the history of the game. He just is. There's nobody that comes close. And every time I watch a Warriors game, I have PTSD from watching him torture the Cavs during those four championship runs of the Golden State Warriors when they played against the Cavs. Cavs got one in 2016, but man, it's frightening to play against Steph, and I'm sure that Sacramento fans feel the same way. But the Kings have been tremendous, and having that 2-0 lead going into the two road games at Golden State, I expect Sacramento to win this series. I think they'd probably get it done. I can't say they're going to get it done in five, but man, I think they have a really good chance of winning this series in six or seven. I expect the Warriors to fight back, but the Draymond suspension certainly opens the door for the Kings to win and get through in a short series. So we will see what happens with Kings-Warriors. All right, those are all eight series that we've touched on. Jason and I will be back tomorrow to talk more in depth about each one of these series. And obviously we'll have a new round of first round games that will have been played by the time we record tomorrow night. So thanks for checking out this quick episode, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.